welcome to episode 92 of the Co-Opticast for Monday, September 10th, 2012. You okay there, Locke?
I hope so.
He's still playing Guild Wars, I think.
I think he's still playing Guild Wars. All right. So, it's episode 92. It is Monday, September 10th, 2012. I'm Mike. I'm joined by Nick and Jason and Canada's own favorite son, Locke Vincent.
Bam, 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 bam.
And,
international hand symbol for Canada right there.
With the exception with the exception of Jason, we were all at PAX last week.
Yay! So we've been
pretty amped about all that, and we got a lot to talk about today, so let's kick off a little what you've been playing.
And somehow, I didn't go to PAX, but I got PAX Pox. I don't quite understand how that works, so I apologize to everyone for my coughing.
It's the smallpox blankets I sent you.
Yes. Damn you, sir.
So, Nick, tell us about what year-old games you've been playing.
Yeah, I've been going through the backlog here at the end of summer, so I just finished Batman Arkham City, which was okay. And I started up Assassin's Creed Brotherhood tonight, actually.
That game is awesome.
Yeah, I'm digging it so far. And what else have I been playing?
Nothing quite says fun like...
I finished that up and started Episode 3. But on the co-op front, I've actually gone back to an older game, and that's StarCraft II.
What?
Here's why. Someone had started playing it. I was like, I didn't get to play much StarCraft co-op. I wouldn't mind checking it out. And then the same day, I actually got an invite to the beta test for the new one. Which is
humble brag.
I still haven't even fired it up, but... What I have fired up, though, in StarCraft 2...
sit on this beta code.
...is some of the new modes that they added. There's like a whole arcade section now where you can check out like custom stuff. And one of the ones is called Left to Die K. And it's a slightly modified version of the official Blizzard Left to Die map. And what it basically is it's a survival map that plays... It almost literally has characters from Left 4 Dead. It has a smoker-like character that can grab your guys and pull them. It has a boomer-type character that explodes. It has some bigger kind of characters and stuff, too. But you have a base you have to defend, and at nighttime, it's like the mission from the game, at nighttime, hordes of these undead guys come in, you have to kill them. And then during the day, you have to go out and actually kill their base.
Oh.
And it's a co-op, like I said, it's a co-op map, two-player co-op, and it's pretty fun. So I played through that two or three times on some varying difficulties, so old stuff is what I've been playing.
That's awesome that you're playing StarCraft.
Yeah, I mean, I played through the single player a long time ago, and I dabbled in the multiplayer, but I never really got to play any CompStop co-op or anything like that. And it's cool that they added some co-op modes. There's actually some really crazy ones. There's this Jurassic Park one out there that there's literally like dinosaurs running around the map, and it kind of plays
play the
like
theme song from Jurassic Park, because that would be rad.
What's that?
So does it play the theme song from Jurassic Park?
I don't remember. It does have the logo on the loading screen.
Nice.
But like, it's cool because it's kind of co-op, but it switches to versus. It's one of those things where like You're together fighting the dinosaurs, but if you die, you become the dinosaurs, and then you fight against them, kind of a thing.
That would be awesome in Orion Dino Beatdown if you became the dinosaurs.
But yeah, so that's what I've been playing pretty much, getting through the backlog, because next week is Borderlands 2, and some other stuff is coming out soon, so gotta clean up.
Gotta clean up shop.
Yeah.
Jason.
Nothing co-op. I've been kind of sick, so I've been keeping to myself, but,
Quarantined,
yeah, playing, some Darksiders 2 and trying to wrap that up in New Game Plus, and, playing Episode 3 of The Walking Dead, and,
Try not to kill yourself out of sadness.
That game just keeps, I say this every time, but it just keeps getting better and better. This time around, it's a little bit more, like they're going for a little bit more of the adventure game, like they do in their traditional series, like Sam and Max and the Monkey Island game. So there's a little bit more of the action slash adventure to it than there were in the first two episodes. But it's still, I mean, very solid. I'm very curious to see kind of how this whole thing's going to wrap up.
There's five episodes this could be, right?
Yeah, so there's going to be two more after this. I mean, everyone knows that it's not going to end well. I mean, you read any of the graphic novels and you're just like, there's no way this can have a happy ending with unicorns and teddy bears and butterflies, but still really curious to see, because at the end of the thing, it gives a very satisfying feeling of, this is my story, like, this is my character that I've created, this is my world that I've kind of gone through and made these choices, good or bad. So it'll be interesting to see.
And you know, episode 4 is written by the internet's own Gary Whitta.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Guy who was the EIC of PC Gamer for a while, and then he wrote the Book of Eli.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really kind of, I don't know what to do with
that. Interesting career jump.
Yes, but he's a great writer, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And Mr. Locke.
Dude, I've been on that hexagon.
Super Hexagon, that game is amazing.
Spinning that triangle.
Have you beaten my score yet? Because I was kicking your ass for a while.
Probably. I always play at night, which is the worst time. I'm half asleep.
Because you have a seizure.
And yeah, you're like... So if you don't know what Super Hexagon is, it's a... what genre is it? Sort of a action-y...
It's basically a Mazzocore
shape
maze game.
Yeah, shape dodger, and you play as this little triangle, and there's only two... It's on the it's on iOS. I don't know if it's on Android yet.
No.
But you start the game, and you can pick the difficulty, and I'm playing on the easiest, just because it's a very difficult game. And you touch either side of the screen to dodge shapes that are incoming from the top of the screen, and they all sort of converge down into the center.
It's like a kaleidoscope, like everything's coming in,
and
the walls change shapes, and you have to dodge in and out of them.
And Locke says he's playing the easiest difficulty, but it should be noted that, like, average life expectancy on the easiest difficulty is something like 15, 20 seconds, maybe, after you've played it a few times. I mean,
what's your high score, Locke?
42.58.
Check that leaderboard.
I'll do that later. I don't want to be embarrassed, so... So no, it's 99 cents. It's an amazing game. It's really fun. Again, one of those games that you just keep playing, you keep playing, you get that muscle memory, and you get good at it. And once you get into a rhythm, you know, you'll do a couple...
You go zen.
Yeah, you get right into that zen, and you can just feel the shapes coming in, and you know exactly where to be. And again, a great hit on the mobile.
It's made by the same guy who did VVVVVV.
Yeah, so if...
If you ever played...
Yeah,
if you ever played that. And it's the same. It's like, as soon as you die, you can instantly restart.
Yeah.
So any frustration... And it is hard. Like, the first time... I'm sure you have a similar story. The first time I played, I lasted 3 seconds. I was just like, what the fuck is this game? And then I died. I was like, what? It's crazy.
One thing I would love is a dynamic leaderboard, in the sense that you could see... somewhere, like, even if you on the kill screen, the game over screen, saying like who's next up, like who you're closest to.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, I think that's really a handy tool for the score attack.
A game I'm playing has that feature, oddly enough.
Oh, what's that?
Rock Band Blitz.
Oh yeah, that's huge score attack game, right?
Yeah, that's basically all it is, and it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not whipping you too bad. My highest score in Super Hexagon is a minute.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to hit a minute here this week, just because I think that's doable. And I did try the harder modes, and they're crazy. Like,
my goal,
I can go about 20 seconds in both of the harder ones, and then I just lose it.
Yeah. My goal is to do Super Hexagon and Plank a Day at the same time.
Yeah.
It would be hard. It's easier if you have an iPad.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, 'cause then you can...
It's easier to just kind of monkey paw at it.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing. I did purchase Guild Wars 2. Nobody told me...
Great game.
Nobody told me that there's 10 gigs of patches, so I was like, dum-da-dum-da-dum, put it in, go eat dinner, come back.
I didn't know there were 10 gigs of patches, because it only downloads like 20 megs a night.
Yeah, but I've been, you know, away for... 3 weeks, so I'm just getting in now. So be forewarned, you're not going to be playing Guild Wars 2 the day you buy it. So But yeah, no, I booted it up. I haven't created a character yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I've heard nothing but good things, and I was, I don't know, I was struggling with that purchase mostly because I knew I was going to have fun either way. I have games to play like The Witcher 1 and 2, which I have full intention of beating, but, you know, I didn't need Guild Wars right now, but I bought it because it's kind of a game that I feel that you kind of need to get in and sort of on the ground floor on, and not because you are going to get out-leveled or that sort of thing, but mostly just because I want to experience it in its purest form, and I don't want to hop into it late where everyone, like, yeah, knows everything. So, yeah, I played a lot of Guild Wars 1, and I like the biggest, of course, the biggest feature for me is the no pressure. Like, there's no monthly fee, so if I need to go away for a couple months and come back, I can, and I don't feel guilty about not playing it. I can go play other games, so I really like it. I like it for that, and, you know, again, I can go based on solely on other people's opinions, you know, yours, Nick's, and a bunch of, you know, a couple dozen other friends that have been playing it, and they say it's nothing. It's just amazing. So I'm looking forward to getting into that. And that's it.
Cool.
Really, really light week. I'm just doing a lot of video crap from PAX.
Yeah, Locke and I, our playlist has a lot of overlap. I played an awful lot of Super Hexagon because I said it on Twitter. It's the king of the just one more.
Yeah.
Just one more go. Just one more go. Oh, God, why did I die? I can do better than that. I can do better than that. Oh, man, I screwed up. I can do better than this. And it's just...
What really sucks is like when you're like, I can do better than this, and then you die 2 seconds later.
Yeah, I know, right? Silly.
Yeah.
Just a side note, you guys, the soundtrack is actually available on the indie music bundle that's going on right now, which by the time you hear this, you're able to purchase. And I think it's pay what you want, and you get, I think, half the albums if you pay over $5, and you get all the albums if you pay over $10. But awesome, awesome video game music. So, and Super Hexagon's in there.
Yeah, and it has a great soundtrack. So I played a lot of Super Hexagon. I've played a lot of Guild Wars 2. And we've, you know, already talked a bit about it. But I think my favorite thing about it is, you know, the public event system works. Like, if you ever played Warhammer Online or any other game like that uses that system, Rift uses it too, where it organically generates events in any of the zones and dynamically scales the challenge level to the number of players that show up. So it brings everyone together, has them do something cool, rewards everybody just for participating, and it keeps the player base engaged with the world in a way that a lot of other MMOs don't.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And actually, my favorite thing about it is that there is a stat that they track called world completion, and it's literally how much of this world have you seen? And that's like landmarks, different zones, dungeons, what have you. But one of the time-honored traditions of anyone playing any MMO is trying to exploit the terrain and climb over a wall that they shouldn't. It's just something people do. So ArenaNet said, well, people are going to do this anyway. Why don't we just make it part of the game? So you'll be wandering around a zone and you'll see a building, and on top of the building is a little map icon. And if you get to the map icon, you do an Assassin's Creed style like viewpoint of the zone, and you get some experience for it. So you'll see one in the world and you'll kind of move towards it, and then you see everybody else that's trying to get up to it. And you can see everybody just kind of sitting there thinking. And then you look over to the right and you see like player after player after player after player falling to their death because they're missing a jump near the top.
That's awesome.
And it's pretty funny. But it's a beautiful game. It's really fun, and you know, you can't beat a no subscription fee, honest to God MMOS MMO. Mm-hmm. So I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And I picked up Rock Band Blitz because I heard an awful lot of people talking about it when we were at PAX, and I'd been curious. I wanted to see if it was, you know, like frequency or amplitude, and it, not really. But it's interesting because...
Is it like Gitaroo Man?
No.
Nothing is like Gitaroo Man.
So basically you change, like, instead of playing one of the note tracks, you flip between the note tracks and you press... You can either use the analog sticks or press the down button and the A button to get, like... So the tracks are simplified to a left note and a right note. So you have to, like, tap out the rhythm that's coming down your lane, and you level up all of the instruments, and there's set checkpoints, and every time you hit a checkpoint, if you've leveled up all of the instruments, you get a level cap increase, and by leveling everything up, everything gets more points. There's power-ups and things like that, so it's pretty interesting, but it gets really hectic because... Rather than let you select a difficulty mode, everything is set to the hardest possible difficulty for the song. And I got quite a wake-up call because pretty much everything I bought on as far as Rock Band DLC was, like, you know, blistering metal. And so it's just like, I'm just sitting here just like freaking out because everything are these crazy rhythms. And I need a break. I go to the vocals and there's like, 10 minutes with no vocals in a song. So I go back to the drums and it's like double kick pedals, and and so there'll be things like, you know, you get like a double kick drum, and then you have to keep pressing like both buttons at the same time repeatedly to do blast beats and weird things like that.
Gross.
But it's
your metal obsession
fun.
Has finally come around to kick you in the ass,
giving
sir.
Me to accelerating my slow descent into carpal tunnel.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly what Rock Band sounds like. Is a carpal tunnel friggin' accelerator.
It's really fun though, and it's all based on high scores, and everybody, you can hook it up to Facebook, and everybody on your friends list that's playing it throws all their scores in, so you can, you know, you'll pass up someone's score in the middle of a song and it'll pop up a thing that says you just beat so and so.
Love it.
And then it pops the next person up on the list. There's this little lane on the right side where you just see an arrow with your score moving up, and you see everyone that you're gaining on moving down.
Love it.
And it's pretty fun, and it's pretty interesting because it'll also put friends of friends onto that list if they have their if they allow friends of friends in their privacy setting.
You know what else did that?
So you'll
the last Need for Speed or Hot Pursuit did that.
Yeah, it's like the auto. It's almost exactly like the autolog stuff in that regard.
Nice.
So. Even if you're beating all your friends, you can see the friends of theirs that are kicking your butt. And I suck at it. I have 5-starred exactly one song on it. So it's pretty challenging. And with that, let's move on and talk about some quick headlines before we get into the meat of our discussion where we talk about PAX Prime. And... not really too much going on. The fall gaming season is extremely effing nigh. So, and I guess I'll start with that. Torchlight 2 finally got its release date,
Ooh.
Which is the 20th of September. And unfortunately, that falls exactly 2 days after Borderlands 2.
Just play one.
Which also releases the same day as Baldur's Gate. Special edition.
Easy solution, Mike. Ouch. Play Torchlight on your PC, your Borderlands on your console, and then Baldur's Gate on your mobile device. Done.
All at once.
All at once.
Yeah, I'd like you to just sit there and think about how I might do that.
All you need to do is just tap the screen on the mobile device.
Yeah.
And plank at the same
Pretty
time.
Pretty much.
Yeah. You got
Wait,
you got
it's
toast.
It's great to see... It's great to see Torchlight finally coming out because, you know, it was supposed to come out last fall. It got delayed, and then Diablo 3 came out, and everyone was worried that it was going to come out right next to Diablo 3 and get buried, and now Diablo 3 has been out for almost five months. So, you know, they've got a nice little window, and it doesn't look like there's too much that's going to... Other than the huge games this fall, that's going to really compete with them in that action RPG space. Let's see, we have some rebranding news. Brothers in Arms Furious 4, the more, let's say, Tarantino-esque take on the Brothers in Arms series that was announced. Was it two E3s ago or was it last year?
I think it was two.
Two. They had that trailer.
So, yeah, it went. It was pretty crazy and over the top, and it's kind of a bad reaction to it because Brothers in Arms is like the actual historically authentic World War II man shooter with the squad mechanics, and they basically look like they're turning it into Inglourious Bastards meets Borderlands.
Which, and there's nothing really wrong.
I don't know. To me, that seems awesome, yeah. But I guess they have a point in changing the tone of the series that drastically. So, it's still coming, but it's being rebranded. We don't know what yet, but might I suggest Hitler Puncher 3D?
Sold. I like that.
Yep.
Yep.
Sold. Yep. Okay. And, Overstrike, the first multi-platform game from Insomniac that we heard about last year as having co-op and looking kind of neat and awesome. It's now being rebranded, it appears, into a game called Fuse.
When is this supposed to come out?
Next year?
They haven't said.
It's not a this year game.
Gameplay. We haven't seen like anything.
That's so weird because I swear I went when I was picking up Guild Wars at Best Buy. You could pre-order Overstrike.
I'm sure you could.
That's so
I'm
weird.
Sure, yeah.
As soon as a game is announced, they freaking have pre-orders.
And I was like, have fun dealing with that mess.
They like those interest-free loans.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. I made a snarky comment that the war on women in gaming is over because Aliens Colonial Marines does, in fact, have playable female characters.
When will you ever learn?
Well, it's, it's a hot button issue in the gaming world right now. There's, there needs to be a culture change in gamers in general to not be complete assholes to, women.
Yeah.
And so there That'd was nice. A, Aliens had a strong, the Aliens franchise always had strong female characters, and it seemed like you weren't going to be able to play as a female character in Colonial Marines if you wanted to, and everyone cried foul, and Gearbox has finally come out and said that there are indeed female characters in the game.
That was, so, Andrew pointed out in his post, it was something that probably could have gotten cleared up, like, right then and there real easily, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's not like... It's like a bullet point on the back of the... for Gears of War 3, yes. Playable females, probably a bullet point. But for an Aliens game, not really. It's something you
pretty much
expect.
Isn't that a given? Yeah, it's a given.
Yeah. And, there's a whole thing about now that, Gears backtracked on the whole women thing. The prequel game has playable females in it, even though that's retconning the fiction of the universe... And these things go down weird, weird paths. And really, people just need to remember that everybody plays these games, so don't be an idiot.
Everybody's favorite word, retcon.
Yeah, don't be an asshole to women.
Yeah.
Don't be an asshole to
We'll never
to
get
anybody.
You anywhere.
Because
that's
what?
True.
If we retcon women out of the universe, we don't exist.
Ooh. Yeah. And all that there's left is... Grass.
What?
We are a planet of grass. You're absolutely right. That's all that's left. Everything else goes. Just grass.
Speaking
air, water, rocks, and grass.
Speaking of getting rid of women.
I don't like where this
I'm
is going.
I'm not following that segue, Locke.
Co-op makes you less violent, Mike.
Co-op does make you less violent. How is that related to getting rid of women, Locke?
I don't write this stuff.
Actually, you kind of do.
It writes itself.
That's terrible. Thank you for derailing our podcast, Locke.
Oh, I'm just putting it back on
track. It's terrible. Yeah, so there have been studies, and we have an article up about this if you'd like some more details, that go to show that players exposed to playing co-op rather than versus tend to be less aggressive, use less violent terms to describe things, and generally work to make the world a better place for everyone in it.
Though keep in mind, as with all studies, correlation does not equal causation.
Well, let's just see. Can you fist bump in Army of Two? Yes. Can you hug in Portal 2? Yes. Both co-op games... Whereas What do you do in Halo? Teabag? No, I don't know.
Halo makes me feel closer to people.
I guess, yeah. For my argument,
you know, say Fable, you can hold hands.
Totally, I love it.
Yeah. What I find actually, so kind of side that, what I actually found really interesting about this study was, it supports going back to further psychological studies from years past was the general census.
Disclaimer: Jason went to school for psychology.
Oh, yes, I did. Expert talking.
So he's going to drop some science here.
I'm going to drop some science on your heads. But it goes back to a lot of other studies that are famous studies that people have done in terms of the psychology of people interacting with one another and the prisoner's dilemma of do you screw your partner or do you help them out. Basically, the underlying principle is that I can't remember the name of it now, but basically with a primer such towards a certain behavior type, you're almost rewarding yourself again with that same behavior type. So, in other words, if you're primed such that working cooperatively is a good thing, you will continue to work cooperatively as a rewarding behavior.
If I push this button, I get a cookie, right?
If you push the button, you get a cookie, Mike. Awesome. I think it's interesting, though, because in this case, there wasn't a reward given in terms of here's a cookie or here's something. It was the reward of the experience of the game itself being, you know, that sort of continue with that feeling and wanting to get that feeling again in a real-world situation, as one of the studies does, by working together after the game is over that people are trying to recreate. So I think it's interesting. As I kind of said, correlation does not equal causation. I think it's just a interesting study to be done. I think studies like these are actually worthwhile to kind of take a look at the psychology and the impacts that what we do and create have on people as a whole.
That's profound, dude.
I think it's definitely worthwhile that people are starting to take a look at things other than just are games violent. I mean, there's far more out there.
Guess what? Games are violent.
Games are violent.
And you just have to look at them.
I mean, look at Furious 4.
And look at Mario. You jump on the heads of those innocent Goombas.
And you squish them.
You squish them dead. And you abuse... It's animal abuse, right?
It is.
And you're jumping on turtles, throwing them, lighting things on fire. I mean, even our simplest games are violent.
And yet, they can bring out the best in us.
And, let's see. I skipped over this, but... last but not least, Steam's Big Picture Mode has it rolled out yet? Has anyone downloaded the new Steam beta?
Doing it right now.
No. Anyway, rolling out extremely imminently is the long, long in development 10-foot UI for Steam that will allow you to use a gamepad to control Steam and basically make your PC into a little console type HTPC if you were. You're into hooking your computer up to your television and sitting on your couch.
I was going to say, break it down for us. How does this work?
I've heard some good feedback like from the folks that are checking it out so far.
What you can do is you've got a, you know, running from your computer, big long-ass HDMI cable, or if you just run it in the same room, small-ass HDMI cable, you run that into your TV.
So first you need an ass. The size of the ass may vary.
I digress.
Your friend Todd, you might have three of them.
Yeah. So yeah, and then you get you can get a wireless controller, and basically the Steam big screen update makes it super.
Or one of these.
Or a wired one. It's up to you. It's got a really nice minimalist interface. It's kind of like the cross media bar for PlayStation, but it makes it super easy, and you can navigate it all using your gamepad, which is awesome.
And it's the UI is labeled using the language of the Xbox 360 controller.
So,
which is, you know, about as close to a standard as you're going to get there.
Yep. So what? Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the most interesting thing about it to me was that, you know, in interacting with a PC, we're constantly typing stuff, we're searching, we're filtering. Yeah. And they came up with a pretty ingenious on-screen keyboard that uses a hybrid of your analog stick. So basically, it looks like a lotus flower. So each pedal has four buttons. So you highlight it, and it'll have four letters or symbols or whatever, and they map to the four face buttons on a gamepad. So you can circle around, and you end up twiddling your thumbs pretty crazily. But
you do that anyway.
Sitting there, I actually sat there and thought about how I would input text with something like that, and it actually seemed pretty intuitive. And something that it seems to do really well is give access to special characters a lot quicker than something like, say, the Xbox 360's own on-screen keyboard.
Or even
and the other thing I enjoyed was all the preview screenshots that we've seen of it showcased some good couch co-op games. There, the big one was Jamestown.
Yeah.
I'm really curious. What is the? Does anyone know what the graphics look like? I mean, how it reses with the screen?
It's a 10-foot UI, so yeah. The UI scale just scale. It's everything scales up, and it doesn't look exactly like Steam. It looks like closest thing. Like Locke says, it looks like XMB. Nick and I kind of agree that it looks a lot closer to like a very stripped down Xbox 360 dashboard. So. It's pretty.
It's very nice.
Pretty slick looking.
How about the games themselves when they play?
It's the same.
It's just a PC game.
It's totally the same. Yeah, like the first game I put in was actually Jamestown, and it scales super well, especially for the pixel art and the sprites.
So it doesn't have quite the same sort of thing like when you normally hook your PC up and you start playing on a TV.
No,
oh, it does. It doesn't scale your games. It just scales the Steam UI.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, an achievement pops up, and it's not 10-point font on your screen. It's sized so you can read it. You know, the Steam overlay is sized appropriately, but, you know, as with any PC game played on an HD TV, the best results are going to be using a gamepad and playing games that are either indie games that were designed with it in mind or a console port, because those usually have pretty good controller support.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then a game like Syndicate comes along and the text is unreadable from 10 feet on an HD TV. But I think it'll be pretty good for people who are already hooking those up to the old living room TV.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so let's move on. Give Jason's voice a rest. And let's talk about PAX Prime, guys. How awesome was that?
It was swell.
It was really nice. It was a great show. I had a lot of fun. There was tons of cool stuff there. Very different from E3, and I'm happy for that.
Yeah, it's not all business like E3.
Oh man,
not that E3 is all business, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely a super industry, you know, investor business heavy show, and. You know, you're there to haul ass and work, but PAX has a super different vibe, almost the opposite vibe, where everyone there is just giddy about gaming, and everyone's there for a different reason, but we're all coming together on this sort of common ground of being geeks, so it's definitely one of my favorite things in the year. We also played some games.
Yeah,
we did. We played a ton of games. We went into PAX because you know we had just done E3 a couple months ago. So Nick said, you know, we're gonna go to PAX and you know see our friends, and we're not gonna take that many appointments. And we took a lot of appointments, and we originally it was like two appointments a day, and then we'd all go and kind of you know gang tackle them and have fun at the show. And it turned out that we had more like six or seven appointments a day, and it was a lot of fun. We saw a lot of really good. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I spent most of the time focused on the board game stuff and the indie booth because we saw all the big stuff we had already seen, and you know we got some updates on it. But
that was pretty much
that indie booth was chock full of really good stuff, and you know we. We saw the game that we seem to have been previewing forever. We all got to play a close to finished version of Monaco, and it's coming along really well. Nick, you played like you and I played it after PAX 2010.
It was a while ago. I don't even remember when.
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. We played an early build, and we had Andy on, So we're what, episode 92 of a podcast that we put about 20 to 22 episodes out a year of.
Yeah.
And we interviewed Andy about Monaco on episode 53.
Holy smokes.
So that was a while ago.
Yeah.
And the game's come a long way since then. The character classes are all, you know, in place. They have their special abilities enabled, and it's just great fun. And the, you know, Jason, you'll love this. The soundtrack is done by Austin Wintory.
Ooh.
You know, the guy who did Journey.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's, that was really fun. I got a couple standout moments. Couple standout moments for me, and I'll ask you guys what was good for you, and then after that we'll talk briefly about Cards Against Humanity. But two standout moments for me really was putting hands on the cave. I have been an adventure game fan as long as I have been playing PC games, and you know, the Monkey Island series has been my favorite, along with, you know, the Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle. And to play a modern game in the vein of Maniac Mansion that Ron Gilbert put together, it just felt great. You know, it's I've said this every time I've talked about the game. It is the Lost Vikings meets Maniac Mansion.
And I was like there. Three characters. I was there with Mike the whole time. You should have seen the shit eating grin on his face the whole time he was playing. Just like, yeah. Okay, and I could.
Yeah, Locke also thought I was some kind of sorcerer after I blazed through the demo.
Dude, you went in there.
Everybody else in that room was like, and I just busted. You know, from start to finish, I had a couple of seconds where I was figuring out how the controls felt, and then I just ran through everything. And he's like, "Dude, you just tore that demo apart." I'm like, "Yeah, actually, this was the E3 demo, so I had seen, so it was the E3 demo with the dragon in front of the spike pit that you have to get by. But the interesting thing about it is at E3 they said that the puzzle was incomplete. They hadn't put all the pieces in. There was a story hook that was supposed to clue you into what the puzzle was. So they just kind of ran you through the general gist of the puzzle. So I had you know those old hint books you get with adventure games, and they'd so like, you know, here's tip one. Okay, tip two is a little more accurate. Tip three is like, this is what you do. I got kind of like the tip one and a half. Nice. From the E3 demo, so I knew what I needed to do, and then I pieced the rest together. And there's things like one of the hints is actually entirely audio. There's some water dripping, and you can hear it before you can see it, and you kind of have to piece together what's going on. There's an intro to the puzzle. They set up that you're going to visit the cave, which is, they charge admission to. It's like a wonderful amusement park. This guy set up this desk, and he's like, oh, well, we're all closed for the day, but I'll let you in if you go fetch me three treasures from the back room. And
nice.
Go to the back room.
Yeah, it was just
dragons
just
and stuff
oozing there. With style, and again, I didn't hear any of the audio, but man,
it's very funny.
Yeah.
It's very funny. The omnipresent narration of the cave is really good. So, second standout moment for me was in... Yeah. And we had the opportunity to go and see Epic Mickey 2. But instead of having a normal booth tour, like you would at any other event, the opportunity was actually to go just sit down with Warren Spector... Just in a it was in a hotel meeting room, and there were about six of us that were invited in, and there were obviously some more sessions throughout the day, but
only
about
one
six
was
of us.
Allowed to leave.
Yes, and we just got, you know, he stepped through Epic Mickey 2, showed us kind of the design philosophy about the game, showcased the drop in drop out co-op, and how the asymmetric nature of the characters does things like preserve the decision making to player, you know, the player controlling Mickey makes all the ethical decisions from within the world. So whether you're going to create or destroy is essentially the way you take a path through that game. and all of those powers related to doing that are restricted to Mickey. So if, you know, if someone pops up, picks up controller 2 and starts screwing around, it won't screw with your playthrough. And then you could work together to, you know, find an alternate route through things and maybe find some treasure that you couldn't get outside of co-op. That was pretty neat. But I think the greatest thing about that was how he... I've seen some articles about this before, about how he's trying to convince people that Epic Mickey is like Deus Ex, because everybody keeps asking him to make Deus Ex again. And so he actually zoomed back out and just talked about his game design philosophy in general, about how the reason that so much choice and so many paths exist in all of the games he designs is because he personally believes that a player should never be impeded because they aren't skillful enough to do something. So, you know, the reason that you could just simply shoot your way through everything in Deus Ex is because, you know, you might not sit there and say and want to explore the level, and, you know, having to funnel you to find a very specific grate or something to move on would be frustrating to a player. So it gives you all these options so you can play the game the way you want, experience the story the way you want. And it made a lot of sense, and it was pretty cool. And I still want him to make another Deus Ex, but, you know, at least I kind of understand where he's coming from when he makes these games. And it's very clear from talking to him that he is a huge Disney geek, which is, you know, why he's making these games. So cool. Let's go with Nick. What was stand out from PAX?
Standout. I mean, saw a lot of good stuff. We got to go to Monolith and see Guardians of Middle Earth again, get some more time with that. And I think they really kind of nailed what would make that genre fun for a more casual player and not the esports kind of crowd.
You mean the all the people that took the PAX tickets?
Yeah, those people.
Esports.
So, yeah, you know, we went to Monolith and checked out Guardians of Middle Earth, which is it's a MOBA for consoles, 360 and PS3, with Lord of the Rings license. And even though what we played was competitive, you know, obviously they're going to have bots for co-op, and they seem to have a lot of stuff to focus to around co-op, like they said about keeping a party together and kind of jumping from match to match and stuff like that. But just... the character abilities and things you can do, they're very there's good variety to them. It was just, I don't know, it felt really good. It was fun, and like, it was one of those things where like, we were done. I actually, when I came home, I fired up one of the MOBAs, and it's just like, I lasted like 3 or 4 minutes. I was like, this is just not the same. It's not what I want to do in this kind of game.
It really eased a novice MOBA player into the genre, and if nothing else, I think it'll be a great stepping stone for people to jump to those other games, because the learning curve in something like Dota or League of Legends is just impossible.
It sucks.
It's like,
it sucks.
It's like hopping into a game of Counter-Strike now. It's everybody knows everything about this game, and if you don't play the right way, you'll be dead in seconds, and everyone will be yelling at you.
Yeah.
And it's so like, it's like, you know, it worked out really well.
I was going to say, it's almost like if he ever picked up one of the Modern Warfare games and he tried to jump in multiplayer like 3 or 4 weeks after the game launches, you're done. You can't do anything because everyone's already unlocked all the cool things.
They've got so many chug.
So. But yeah, so I think that was really cool. And just getting to see you know, a lot of the Monolith history stuff there was neat. You know, we had joked about the Shogo sequel and we saw some No One Lives Forever stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Being an old PC gamer geek, like, all that stuff was just really cool. And
the conference room that our kind of our roundtable meeting was in is the Kate Archer room. Which,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Everything.
You know, I enjoyed that because No One Lives Forever is one of my favorite games.
So, and I guess I don't know. Nothing else really stood out at me too much. Like, I enjoyed just talking to a lot of the indie devs and stuff about their process and things like that. Company of Heroes 2, I wrote up that preview today. That kind of surprised me. an old Company of Heroes fan, and they're really adding a lot to that game. I think the subline I actually used in my preview kind of said it all. It's like putting the real in real-time strategy. because they are. I mean, they're doing a lot of things that just make sense. Their true sight, I think, is what it's called, where basically every character on the battlefield has a line of sight, and that's what you actually see in the game. It's not just it's not a fog of war. It's actually what they're seeing. So things like buildings and smoke and even snow and stuff can block your line of sight to somewhere else. So you can use that to your advantage, or it can be used against you to your disadvantage. The cold weather system is just, it's like a third, you know, it's like a second enemy that you're constantly facing. So your troops don't freeze to death. You have to constantly think about where you're moving. If there's cover there, are there buildings to go in? Can you light fires to keep them warm? Do you leave your tank on the ice and have it get mortared and sink it to the bottom of the lake? You know, those kind
that,
of things.
That's awesome.
Yes, and then it freezes over again. It's just it's crazy how detailed it was, and it seems really early. You know, I have a feeling that's going to be a late 2013 game, maybe even a summer.
I want it now.
They've got what they have in place is really solid. And I said in the preview, I think there's going to be a co-op campaign. Now, obviously, they won't confirm it yet because, you know, gaming PR sucks donkey dick, but...
yeah, I'd love to be talking about Loco Cycle right now.
You know, it's all slow trickle to them.
Co-op to cast after hours.
Well, Nick and I were sitting there playing, and we play the first tutorial mission. The second mission is a two-on-two skirmish. We look at each other, and we're like, what the hell? Why aren't we playing against this enemy?
They give you an AI guy. He has his own base. He does his own things.
Yeah, like it sucks. Like it's
obvious there's going to be some sort of co-op, whether it's through the actual campaign or whatever it is. They're building co-op play into it, but because of the PR trickle, they can't confirm it.
It's such a pivotal part of the game in that when you pick... I'm a big Company Heroes nerd, too, and when I was writing up that part of that article, I it took all of my power not to just like all caps, this is the best thing ever, strategy redefined, but I mean, it's important in that game to have co-op, because you can go down one path with your commander strategy and you can be like a total airborne army, and then your partner can be like a groundborne army, and it's pretty cool the different strategies that compound on each other. But and again, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I really like how Relic does their real-time strategy games now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dawn of War 2 and Company Heroes and stuff. It's less focus on resource management and base building and more about tactics and positioning. And, you know, it's kind of, I said this in the preview and it didn't hit me. It's not about, do I have enough guys to go fight enough of their guys?
It's not a math problem. Right?
That's exactly it. Yeah, which is something like StarCraft, right? You know, which I just kind of fired up recently. It's constantly a math problem. Do I have enough SCVs mining this mineral? Do I have, you know, enough to buy these three guys? And that, and it's,
you can't defeat it with a spreadsheet like you can most other RTSs.
So there's a lot of variables you have to take into consideration for Company Heroes 2 now. It's really cool. So I'm looking forward to it for sure. I hope they announce co-op sooner rather than later so we can keep covering it.
Yes.
But we'll see.
All right, Locke.
Oh, man.
Tell me what you liked about PAX.
The drinking.
No. Really?
No.
You didn't drink anything.
I didn't.
Lots of water.
Just water, and I worked out every day. No, I thought Company Heroes 2 was amazing, and to echo Nick's sentiment, again, going into Battle Block Theater not knowing a ton of what that game was, I don't think anyone knew much.
Why did I not talk about Battle Block? Thank you.
Because I'm going to talk about it for you, because I was just, you know, it was a game where I'm like, hey, I know what the Behemoth do. They make these kind of cute art games, and they're fun. Castle Crashers is great. Alien Hominid is decent. But I didn't really know what Battle Block Theater was. And after spending, you know, half an hour with those guys, I am so stoked for that game as just this. I guess I should.
Yeah, this sandbox
of chaos, this toy box that they're just handing you, and they're saying, "Have fun." And they showed us the level editor, which I'm really excited for because I don't like building levels in games. I don't like creating content. I really like finding good content in games, and there's people that spend tons of time doing that. But this motivated me to. I want to
make
a
campaign. You enjoy sitting in bed and having the pudding fed to you instead of making
exactly,
your own.
But now I'm going to feed the pudding to everyone because it's so simple. The level builder they have is so simple. It's all super easy to navigate with the controller. And I guess
it's tile-based.
Yeah, and I mean, the way they've structured their campaign, it's kind of these one bite-sized level, and you have that in sort of a... I think it's 15 the max levels.
15 level sequence.
Yeah, in a playlist.
So what they basically made is the ability to create a playlist of levels and then submit the playlist as a whole rather than an individual level. You can throw 15 up at a time, trade it with your friends. You can play co-op in the level editor. So you could build a level with a buddy. And they showed it. I wrote about it in the article. The thing that they showed us was that they have this tool called the Quad, which basically makes four mirrored copies of whatever you're doing. So you can build like a multi-platform symmetrical level with a touch of a button.
Yeah.
And with one more button, you can change the game mode. You can mix and match the game modes. The thing that they showed us was it was King of the Hill. It was like a King of the Hill mode where there were also basketballs in the level and hoops, and you could pick up the basketballs and slam dunk while fighting for a King of the Hill zone.
Yeah, and people are always like, well, what is it? What is the game? I've come to decide that it is a mini-game action platformer, and that with tons of your own content that you can make and tons of unlockables, they have the... Mike, I always forget the... What are they called? Baku Baku balls?
The Chonku Chonku.
Chonku Chonku things, which I think is genius, where what you earn in-game, the sort of the currency...
These things.
Yeah, the currency you earn in-game, you go to the unlockable area in the jail, it's all taken...
And you go to vending machines,
and you get
stuff out of the vending machine, and there's a player economy, because you can trade stuff with your friends.
Like a new hat.
Yeah.
So... Anyways, Battle...
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, that game's looking really great, and, it's just they use the term co-optional to describe it, because in the adventure mode, there's two-player co-op, you roll through with a buddy, and, platform your way to victory, but, they suggested doing things like, there's a long pit here. So pick up your friend and throw him onto the spikes at the bottom of the pit, and then use his corpse as a platform to make your way across.
Yeah.
And it's just all the character that their games always have is there in spades. So
yeah,
I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's looking a lot like I saw it in 2011 at PAX East, and it was looking really solid then, and now they have the level editor. So hopefully that's coming soon, but I'm not really expecting that till next year.
And hopefully the Battle Block Theater arcade machine is coming to your house.
I'll just build one. And the last thing I was excited for was...
Oh my god, there's somebody behind
me. I don't want to alarm you, Locke, but you might be murdered soon.
Torchlight 2.
Peace out, bro.
Peace in the East.
Secret Canadian hand signals.
That's right. He's going to actually do some smoke signals outside. Torchlight 2. I wasn't not excited for this, but after playing it, and Nick and I played through part of Act 2, I was so happy to play that game, and I am ready. I'm ready for it.
Next week, man.
Your body is ready.
That's mental. That's mental. And we have a good relationship with the Runic guys, and they're just so fun to talk to. But, I mean, I don't know what it was. Yeah. Like, I enjoyed, don't get me wrong, I really, really enjoyed Diablo 3. I will continue to play Diablo 3, but, like, I am ready to sink my teeth into Torchlight. I don't know what it is.
You're looking for a game with heart.
Yeah, totally. I think that's actually what it is. That's probably what it is. Just because it's part of it is the art direction. Part of it is the writing and the color and all that. But yeah, it definitely the sort of the heart. It's that weird X factor that it has. So, woo. Anyways, it was fun to play that finally. Because I hadn't played the beta when you guys all had, so.
But you played it with me at E3.
Yeah, but that was the first act, and we played for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, because I had played like eight
hours
of the beta.
Dude, we got to kill a freaking manticore. It was insane.
Awesome.
And a manticore's wife.
Spoiler!
Hey, no, that's... What did we say about the war on women, guys? Yeah. It's over.
No, it was cool.
My
man.
Favorite game at PAX was all of them.
Nice.
My favorite experience at PAX was seeing all of the cosplayers.
Yes.
And asking them to take their photos. And sometimes there were cute girls.
My favorite part of PAX was convincing 6 chumps that I was Warren Spector.
Oh, man.
Damn, sir, that's ice cold. And I guess, you know, PAX is a great show. We had a lot of fun. And the most fun I had the entire time was when we bought Cards Against Humanity.
Yes.
And we can't really talk about it here other than saying that it is an incredibly revealing game about everybody that you play it with. It is apples. If you've ever played apples to apples, it is that, except horrible. And not in that it's a bad game, in that it actually makes you a bad person.
I don't feel...
It's racist, it's sexist, it's...
homophobic.
Well, the thing is, it's not inherently any of those things,
no,
but the players make it that.
Well,
they enable you to be racist,
sexist. Some of the cards are pretty blatantly one thing or the other. But,
right.
Yeah.
But
if you offend everyone equally, then you can't be
exactly.
Any of those things.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's right. We had a lot of fun. I contemplated asking Locke to set up the video camera while we played, but
I was laughing.
I think most
too
of
hard.
It would have just been action shots of Locke just falling off the bed laughing.
I was literally falling off the
bed. I was
bed.
Writhing.
That's not an expression. Locke was on the floor half the time we were playing. He has the most infectious laugh.
I am not a bad person, but man, do I have a really tainted mind. Like, I would get halfway through a card and I couldn't read it. I dug into parts of my soul I didn't even know existed. So,
dude, I still can't say giant mongoloid without laughing.
it's
a robust mongoloid, actually.
It was robust.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's terrible.
Even better.
So, but better yet, as soon as I got home, this is, again, a side story, I immediately ordered it, except I ordered the Canadian version, so I guess, like, Dick Cheney is replaced by, like, Jean Chrétien or something. But also, my wife's like, oh, I played the best game this weekend when you were away. I was like, oh, what's that? Cards Against Humanity. So I was like, yes!
Awesome.
I played
with my wife, my brother, and my sister-in-law for the... last night, and it was
fine. Young cats
of actually, yes, we actually topped the worst thing that we managed at PAX, and I was really surprised.
Don't repeat it. This
I will wait until we turn the mics off. Yes. So I think, unless anyone else has anything to talk about PAX,
I was just gonna say talk about Flashpoint.
Oh shit! Yeah. Flashpoint, go. Lock.
We decided that we really wanted to play a board game, a cooperative board game together, and we were looking at a couple different ones. We spent, you know, every time we were in the building, we kind of poked around through the board game section to see what there was, and there's, you know, a horror board game called Section 6 or 7, I think. There's a couple there.
Sector 7,
Sector,
I think.
Sector 7. A lot of people were playing Zombie Side. Which was a zombie survival co-op game. But I had heard of one that Mark actually covered on the site called Flashpoint Fire Rescue. And it is a... just the quick of it is you're trying to save people from a burning house. and you can play with 2 to 6 players. Each person takes a different role, and it's actually really cool. It's neat how the mechanics work in that you have a certain amount of action points. You kind of have to do some risk reward in if you want to end up in a space that's close to a fire. You might risk, you know, getting knocked out. The fire spreads by dice rolls, and it's over a cool grid. But we played that a couple times, and we all really liked it. It was a super good game, I thought.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And I think it was only like $40. It's made by Indie Boards and Cards, the same guys who do Resistance and Haggis, which are both really good games. The reason I wanted to get this one in particular too was a little selfish of me, but it never gets shipped here to Calgary. Like, it is never in stock. So I was like, oh yeah, I saw it, so I picked it up. And because I picked it up in PAX, they gave me some promotional little fireman token pieces, which was great.
So. Yeah, that was actually, I talked to Mark about that. Apparently that was a Kickstarter exclusive.
Oh, cool.
So you got lucky.
Yeah. But cool. I've managed to play it another, I'd say, 5 or 6 times since I've been home on the harder difficulties.
Wow.
And we've only won a third of the time. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty hard.
But when the co-opter crew played it,
oh, we
100%.
That's great.
Yeah.
Even when we cheated the first time.
that was learning the rules.
We didn't realize we cheated. We just had that, you know, like every board game with a reasonable degree of complexity, the instructions are impenetrable until you start playing.
Yeah.
And
that's, I guess,
what she said.
One thing I will say about co-op board gaming is that I found it is a really awesome way to get people that might be intimidated to play sort of European strategy board games or sort of American Euro strategy board games. Some people aren't into those, and I think co-op board games now, stuff like Flashpoint, stuff like Shadows Over Camelot, Battlestar Galactica, Arkham Horror, are a really great stepping stone. It's a really good gateway drug into getting them into sort of more advanced board games. So if you are one that enjoys, you know, more complex strategy games, and they don't have to be super high concept, but, you know, if you want to evolve someone past something like Settlers of Catan, you know, play a co-op board game with them, because you're all sort of learning together and playing together and strategizing together, and then they can kind of go on to sort of make a decision whether or not, you know, they want to play something else. But that's what I found, even just playing in the last couple of weeks with my friends here. So it's not as cutthroat.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's wrap this up and talk about the fact that the co-op cast is awesome. Guys, it's always a pleasure.
Yes.
So you guys out there in the listening or live stream watching world, we have some apps for your smartphone platform of choice. We have an iOS app. We got Windows Phone 7 apps. We got an Android app. We even have a mobile site for those of you who think this whole dedicated application thing is honky. You can buy some more shirts from our Split Reason affiliate store. They believe there's still a few shirts left. You can leave us some feedback on iTunes if that's where you chose to download this episode. And you can follow us on Twitter at CoOptimus, without the dash. And come on, guys, leave us a voicemail. Number is 646-926-6748.
We're lonely.
And no one calls Canada.
Please call me.
Because it's long distance.
Please call us.
And no one wants to pay charge.
The lines are open.
Okay, that's just creepy. I don't think people are going to call us now. Anyway, we'll see you again in 2 weeks, because we are going to have Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2 to talk about, and it's going to be crazy next time.
And some other twos, just because.
Just because. All right. Peace.